Chapter 25. That's right," he exclaimed twice, approvingly. "Andy, so you have been looked after by..." Dot-dot-y frowned slightly at the Dame de Compagnie, who was still nursing the cat. "Conclude Eleanor Madame de S is engaged. I know she expected somebody today. So the newspaper man did turn up, eh? She is engaged?" For all answer, the Dame de Compagnie turned away her head. "It is very unfortunate indeed. I very much regret that you should have been..." Dot-dot-y lowered suddenly his voice. "But what is it? Surely you are not departing, Natalia Viktorovna. You got bored waiting, didn't you?" "Not in the least," Miss Alden protested. "Only I have been here some time, and I am anxious to get back to my mother. The time seemed long, eh? I am afraid our worthy friend here..." Peter Ivanovich suddenly jerked his head sideways towards his right shoulder, and jerked it up again. "Our worthy friend here has not the art of shortening the moments of waiting. No, distinctly yes, he has not the art. And in that respect, good intentions alone count for nothing." The Dame de Compagnie dropped her arms, and the cat found itself suddenly on the ground. It remained quite still after alighting, one hind leg stretched backwards. Miss Alden was extremely indignant on behalf of the lady companion. "Believe me, Peter Ivanovich, that the moments I have passed in the hall of this house have been not a little interesting, and very instructive too. They are memorable. I do not regret the waiting, but I see that the object of my call here can be attained without taking up Madame de S.'s time." At this point I interrupted Miss Alden. "The above relation is founded on her narrative, which I have not so much dramatized as might be supposed. As he had rendered, with extraordinary feeling and animation, the very accent almost of the disciple of the old apple woman, the irreconcilable hater of ministries, the voluntary servant of the poor." Miss Alden's true and delicate humanity had been extremely shocked by the uncongenial fate of her new acquaintance, that lady companion, secretary, whatever she was. For my own part, I was pleased to discover in it one more obstacle to intimacy with Madame de S. I had a positive abhorrence for the painted, bedizened, dead-faced, glassy-eyed Egeria of Peter Ivanovich. I do not know what was her attitude to the unseen, but I know that in the affairs of this world she was avaricious, greedy, and unscrupulous. It was within my knowledge that as he had been worsted in a sordid and desperate quarrel about money matters with the family of her late husband, the diplomatist. Some very august personages indeed, whom in her fury she had insisted upon scandalously involving in her affairs, had incurred her animosity. I find it perfectly easy to believe that as he had come to within an ace of being spirited away, for reasons of state, into some discreet maison de santé madhouse of sorts, to be plain. It appears, however, that certain high-placed personages opposed it for reasons which... But it's no use to go into details. Wonder may be expressed at a man in the position of a teacher of languages knowing all this with such definiteness. A novelist says this and that of his personages, and if only he knows how to say it earnestly enough, he may not be questioned upon the inventions of his brain in which his own belief is made sufficiently manifest by a telling phrase, a poetic image, the accent of emotion. Art is great. But I have no art, and not having invented Madame de S, I feel bound to explain how I came to know so much about her. My informant was the Russian wife of a friend of mine already mentioned, the professor of Lawson University. It was from her that I learned the last fact of Madame de S's history, with which I intend to trouble my readers. She told me, speaking positively, as a person who trusts her sources, of the cause of Madame de S.'s flight from Russia, some years before. It was neither more nor less than this: that she became suspect to the police in connection with the assassination of the Emperor Alexander. The ground of this suspicion was either some unguarded expressions that escaped her in public, or some talk overheard in her salon. Overheard, we must believe, by some guest, Perhaps a friend, who hastened to play the informer, I suppose. At any rate, the overheard matter seemed to imply her foreknowledge of that event, and I think she was wise in not waiting for the investigation of such a charge. Some of my readers may remember a little book from her pen, published in Paris, a mystically bad-tempered, declamatory, and frightfully disconnected piece of writing, in which she all but admits the foreknowledge, more than hints at its supernatural origin, and plainly suggests in venomous innuendos, that the guilt of the act was not with the terrorists, but with a palace intrigue. When I observed to my friend, the professor's wife, that the life of Madame de S, with its unofficial diplomacy, its intrigues, lawsuits, favors, disgrace, expulsions, its atmosphere of scandal, occultism, and charlatanism, was more fit for the 18th century than for the conditions of our own time, she assented with a smile, but a moment after went on in a reflective tone. Charlatanism? Yes, in a certain measure. Still, times are changed. There are forces now which were non-existent in the 18th century. I should not be surprised if she were more dangerous than an Englishman would be willing to believe. And what's more, she is looked upon as really dangerous by certain people. Shaynaus in this connection meant Russia in general, and the Russian political police in particular. The object of my digression from the straight course of Miss Haldane's relation, in my own words, of her visit to the Chateau Borel, was to bring forward that statement of my friend, the professor's wife. I wanted to bring it forward simply, to make what I have to say presently of Mr. Razumov's presence in Geneva a little more credible, for this is a Russian story for Western ears, which, as I have observed already, are not attuned to certain tones of cynicism and cruelty, of moral negation, and even of moral distress already silenced at our end of Europe. And this I state as my excuse for having left Miss Haldane standing, one of the little group of two women, and two men who had come together below the terrace of the Chateau Borel. The knowledge which I have just stated was in my mind when, as I have said, I interrupted Miss Haldane. I interrupted her with the cry of profound satisfaction, "So you never saw Madame de S, after all?" Miss Haldane shook her head. It was very satisfactory to me. As he had not seen Madame de S. That was excellent, excellent. I welcomed the conviction that she would never know Madame de S. now. I could not explain the reason of the conviction, but by the knowledge that Miss Haldane was standing face to face with her brother's wonderful friend. I preferred him to Madame de S. as the companion and guide of that young girl, abandoned to her inexperience by the miserable end of her brother. But, at any rate, that life now ended had been sincere, and perhaps its thoughts might have been lofty, its moral sufferings profound, its last act a true sacrifice. It is not for us, the staid lovers calmed by the possession of a conquered liberty, to condemn without appeal the fierceness of thwarted desire. I am not ashamed of the warmth of my regard for Miss Haldane. It was, it must be admitted, an unselfish sentiment, being its own reward. The late Victor Haldane in the light of that sentiment appeared to me not as a sinister conspirator, but as a pure enthusiast. I did not wish indeed to judge him, but the very fact that he did not escape, that fact which brought so much trouble to both his mother and his sister, spoke to me in his favor. Meantime, in my fear of seeing the girl surrender to the influence of the Chateau Borel revolutionary feminism, I was more than willing to put my trust in that friend of the late Victor Haldane. He was nothing but a name, you will say. Exactly. A name. And what's more, the only name to be found in the correspondence between brother and sister. The young man had turned up, they had come face to face, and, fortunately, without the direct interference of Madame de S, what will come of it? What will she tell me presently? I was asking myself. It was only natural that my thought should turn to the young man, the bearer of the only name uttered in all the dream talk of a future, to be brought about by a revolution. and my thought took the shape of asking myself why this young man had not called upon these ladies. He had been in Geneva for some days before Miss Alden heard of him first in my presence from Peter Ivanovich. I regretted that last presence at their meeting. I would rather have had it happen somewhere out of his spectacled sight. But I supposed that, having both these young people there, he introduced them to each other. I broke the silence by beginning a question on that point, I suppose, Peter Ivanovich. Miss Alden gave vent to her indignation. Peter Ivanovich, directly he had got his answer from her, had turned upon the Dame de Compagnie in a shameful manner. Turned upon her? I wondered. Had about? For what reason? It was unheard of. It was shameful, Miss Alden pursued, with angry eyes. Il lui a fait une scene like this, before strangers. And for what? You would never guess. For some ex. Oh. I was astonished. GGS, did you say? For Madame de S, that lady observes a special diet, or something of the sort. It seems she complained the day before to Peter Ivanovich that the eggs were not rightly prepared. Peter Ivanovich suddenly remembered this against the poor woman, and flew out at her. It was most astonishing. I stood as if rooted. Do you mean to say that the great feminist allowed himself to be abusive to a woman? I asked. Oh, not that. It was something you have no conception of. It was an odious performance. Imagine, he raised his hat to begin with. He made his voice soft and deprecatory. Ah, you are not kind to us, you will not deign to remember. Apostrophe this sort of phrases, that sort of tone. The poor creature was terribly upset. Her eyes ran full of tears. She did not know where to look. I shouldn't wonder if she would have preferred abuse, or even a blow. I did not remark that very possibly she was familiar with both on occasions, when no one was by. Miss Alden walked by my side, her head up in scornful and angry silence. Great men have their surprising peculiarities, I observed innately. Exactly like men who are not great. But that sort of thing cannot be kept up forever. How did the great feminist wind up this very characteristic episode? Miss Alden, without turning her face my way, told me that the end was brought about by the appearance of the interviewer, who had been closeted with Madame de S. He came up rapidly, unnoticed, lifted his hat slightly, and paused to say in French, "He Baroness has asked me, in case I met a lady on my way out, to desire her to come in at once." After delivering this message, he hurried down the drive. The Dame de Compagnie flew towards the house, and Peter Ivanovich followed her hastily, looking uneasy. In a moment Miss Alden found herself alone with the young man, who undoubtedly must have been the new arrival from Russia. She wondered whether her brother's friend had not already guessed who she was. I am in a position to say that, as a matter of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.